This is the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the Gospel of Matthew. Today, Pastor Sandy will continue teaching through Matthew chapter 14 on this edition of Sandy Adams Radio.
Then he commanded the multitudes to sit down on the grass, and he took the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, and looking up to heaven, he blessed and broke and gave the loaves to the disciples, and the disciples gave to the multitudes, and a miracle of multiplication took place. Jesus somehow altered the molecular structure of the bread and the fish so that each time a piece was broken off, it added to the volume. The little boy's brown bag refused to empty. And notice what Jesus did with the bread and the fish, because it is exactly what Jesus wants to do with your life and with my life. Here is the Master's fourfold work in our lives. First, he took the bread. And Jesus takes us, doesn't he? He takes us out of the world. He forgives us of our sin. He makes us his own. Second, Jesus blessed the bread. And isn't that what he does to us? He takes us out of the world, then he blesses us with new life, with all spiritual riches in heavenly places in Christ Jesus. He pours on us God's favor and favors. Then finally, he gave the bread to his disciples to give to the multitudes. And Jesus gives us a way. He gives us to the people around us to serve them and to serve him and to minister the truth of the gospel and the love of Jesus to the people around us. All that we like, we want, we relish, we find right here in this verse. He takes us out of the world. He blesses us. Then he uses us. Isn't that what you want for your life? But whoa, wait one minute. Because we left something out, didn't we? Notice, between the blessing and the giving, he breaks the bread. Notice he breaks the bread before he passes it out and gives it away. And this is also what he does to us. He takes us out of the world. He blesses us with his spiritual blessings. He uses us for his kingdom. But between the blessing and the using, he breaks us. He humbles us. And he breaks us of our pride and our self-sufficiency. And he reminds us what we would be like without him. Spiritually speaking, we are puny and powerless. We're nothing but a brown bag lunch. And guys, to be given away in service for Jesus, you first have to be broken. If you're not, you won't be digestible to the people you're trying to serve. People will choke on your haughtiness. You'll produce a case of spiritual indigestion in the people you're trying to minister to unless you're first broken. Before we're broken, we're hard and we're insensitive and we're self-sufficient and we're full of ourselves. And when a proud person tries to serve God, people will choke on our arrogance. We can't be swallowed. They just can't swallow us. That's why we have to be broken. And brokenness is a process. But God is faithful to fulfill that process. Guys, there are no shortcuts. If we want to be used by God, we first have to be broken. Verse 20, so they all ate and were filled, and they took up 12 baskets full of the fragments that remained. Now those who had eaten were about 5,000 men besides women and children. Think about that. They had big families in those days. 5,000 families could have been 20,000 mouths. You can't get 20,000 people in Brookwood Stadium over there. That's a lot of people. Notice too, the 12 baskets of leftovers, I love that. The 12 take-home boxes could have been for the 12 tribes of Israel. I think more probably Jesus had one basket of leftovers for each of the 12 apostles to teach them a lesson that he can turn our little into a lot, he can turn our meagerness into much if we'll bring it to Jesus. Verse 22, immediately Jesus made his disciples get into the boat and go before him to the other side while he sent the multitudes away. Notice Jesus made his disciples set sail. The word implies a strong urging. Evidently, the thrill of the multiplication had captivated them. They didn't want to leave the moment. But here he urges them to set sail. It's time to go. And when he had sent the multitudes away, he went up on the mountain by himself to pray. Now when evening came, he was alone there. And this was Jesus' habit, to retreat from time to time, to pray, to seek God. This would be a good habit for us as well. When life gets busy, it's best to get away, to come apart. And if you don't come apart and spend time with Jesus, you'll come apart. But the boat was now in the middle of the sea, tossed by the waves, for the wind was contrary. A northeasterly had swept down from the Golan Heights, had hit the warm air above the lake, and a sudden storm had rocked the boat in the churning waters. Now the disciples had launched from the northeastern tip of the lake, Bethsaida, and they were sailing toward Gennesaret, which was south of Capernaum, still on the north side of the lake, but now over on the western shore. So here was the plan. They were sailing from the northeastern tip of the lake to its northwestern shore. Very, very short voyage. Should have taken just a few hours. But the storm pushed the boat all the way out into the center of the lake. And understand, the disciples are in trouble. Not because they were disobedient to Jesus. As a matter of fact, if they'd been disobedient, they probably would have stayed on the shore in a safe, dry house with chicken noodle soup in front of them. Probably would have been safe and secure if they had disobeyed the Lord. But instead, they had obeyed the Lord, and it got them into trouble. Do you know that sometimes obeying Jesus gets you into trouble? It's true. When you choose to obey Jesus, you will go against the flow of this world. And sometimes it creates conflict and difficulty. They encounter this storm and all its difficulty because they obeyed the Lord. You know, it's interesting, throughout its history, the church has compared itself to this little boat of disciples. The word nave is an old English word which referred to the main part of the church building, the nave or the sanctuary. But it is a Latin word that actually means ship. In other words, the church was always compared to this little ship. Obedience to God sends us in a direction that's contrary to the prevailing moods and the values of the world. Inevitably, followers of Jesus will encounter rough seas. Now, these were experienced sailors. These men had made a living on the sea, but they were in real trouble. And in the fourth watch of the night, Jesus went to them walking on the sea. The fourth watch was around 3 a.m. That means they had been floundering on the water now for about 8 hours. And when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were troubled, saying, "It's a ghost!" And they cried out for fear. I'm certain they weren't expecting to see anyone walk out on the water toward them. It shocked the disciples. They really didn't know what to think. But immediately Jesus spoke to them, saying, "Be of good cheer, it is I. Do not be afraid." Hey, when you're in trouble, Jesus always comes to us, but often in ways that we don't expect. He comes, but he comes in ways we don't expect. You know, we think one moment that the Lord is nowhere. Then suddenly, he's now here. Same letters, just a different perspective, aren't they? Here's good news. Sudden storms are as much a part of the Christian life as supernatural surprises. That's why we need to be on the lookout for both. When a storm arises, don't panic. Look for Jesus walking on the water. He'll come bringing you good cheer. And notice Jesus calms the storm in the boat before he calms the storm on the sea. This is always his priority. He wants to calm both. If we understand the purpose of the storm, we'll realize that Jesus wants to bring peace to our hearts even before he brings peace to our lives. Notice in verse 28, Peter asks to do some supernatural surfing. And Peter answered him and said, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water." Now what a bold request this is. Peter isn't afraid. The rest of the disciples, they're in shock over just seeing Jesus walking on the water, but Peter wants to join him. Isn't it interesting for Peter? Following Jesus wasn't this dutiful, obligatory life that he had enrolled in. No, I believe for Peter, following Jesus was an opportunity for new adventure. That's how he looked at it. That what Jesus did, if I'm going to follow him, I can do it too. That was Peter's attitude. And so Jesus said, come. What do you do now? Well, he got out of the boat. And when Peter had come down out of the boat, he walked on the water to go to Jesus. Notice this, he's doing great. He's doing fine. He's staying dry. He's staying above the waves until, but when he saw that the wind was boisterous, he was afraid and beginning to sink. Notice, Peter was doing great as long as his focus was on Jesus. But the moment he got his eyes off Jesus, he had the buoyancy of a rock. Flotation depends on focus. Remember that in your life when you're going through troubled waters. You know, the lesson here is so clear. If we want to live a supernatural life, if we want to stay happy even when life gets rough, keep your eyes on Jesus. You deal with the unpleasant circumstances responsibly. You deal with them effectively. But at the moment you're dealing with them, you still keep your eyes on Jesus. It's by keeping our eyes on Jesus that we stay above it all. That we stay above what might drag us down and get us wet and cause us fear. Keep your eyes on Jesus and stay above the circumstances of life. You know, often Peter gets a black eye for this episode. But I happen to admire him. He's the only disciple who got out of the boat. You know, most Christians sit back and enjoy the safety of the boat without ever risking anything for Jesus. They're afraid to get wet. Hey, you'll never walk on water if you don't get out of the boat. And when Peter sinks, he knows what to do. Give him credit. He cried out saying, Lord, save me. And immediately Jesus stretched out his hand and caught him and said to him, oh, you of little faith, why did you doubt? Jesus was right there to rescue him. As soon as he cried out. You know, in extra-biblical writings, Peter is often referred to by a nickname. He's called the giant. Pete evidently was a big man, which meant that Jesus also must have been a very strong man. Because he grabbed Peter by one hand and just sort of curled him right back into the boat. Jesus was a carpenter. Before the days of electric drills and power saws, I mean, Jesus was a pretty buff, muscular guy himself. He pulls Peter back into the boat. Remember, Jesus always rescues faith-challenged swimmers. Jesus always rescues faith-challenged swimmers. But for me, I got to tell you, for me, I'd rather surf than sink every now and then than to play it safe and spend my whole life in the boat. You give me a choice, I'd rather surf. And when they got into the boat, the wind ceased. Then those who were in the boat came and worshiped him, saying, truly, you are the Son of God. And when they had crossed over, they came to the land of Gennesaret. Now notice this story. Let's sum it up. Jesus sends his disciples into the storm. He prays for them during the storm from top of the mountain. Finally, he saves them from the storm. In between, a lot of adventure takes place. Isn't this what the Christian life is all about? He sends us out into the storms of life. He prays for us. He intercedes for us in heaven. He even joins us through the Holy Spirit as we encounter the storm. And then he saves us from the storm. And in between, it's a lot of fun and great adventure. Notice Jesus docks the boat now in Gennesaret. One of my favorite places to stay in the Galilee is the hotel there at Gennesar or Gennesaret. It's where the Jesus boat, you heard me talk about that. The Jesus boat is on display there as well. And when the men of that place recognized him, they sent out into all that surrounding region. And that surrounding region now is the western shore of the Sea of Galilee, which was the most populated part of the region. And they brought to him all who were sick and begged him that they might only touch the hem of his garment. And as many as touched it were made perfectly well. Now, if you'll go back and read Numbers 15, verse 38, we're told there that every Jewish male wore tassels on the borders of their garment. The tallit is what they call it. But it's a tassel that they wear on the borders of their garment, and a blue thread is woven into the tassel. The blue stands for heaven. And so when folks came and touched Jesus' tassels, in their minds they were touching the power of heaven, and indeed they were. Heaven had come to earth in healing power. I think it's true today. If you want to touch heaven, get to know Jesus. Chapter 15 begins. Then the scribes and Pharisees who were from Jerusalem came to Jesus saying, "Why do your disciples transgress the tradition of the elders?" Now understand, these were not serious seekers. They were theological hitmen. And they were coming to ensnare Jesus, to find fault in His teaching so that they could label Him a blasphemer. And here was their specific beef. "For your disciples do not wash their hands when they eat bread." Now, Jewish rabbis taught that in addition to the law of Moses, God had given further instructions to Moses that weren't written down, but were passed on orally. They believed that these traditions were the key to correctly interpreting the law. By the end of the 2nd century AD, this oral tradition had been recorded and codified in a book called the Mishnah. To some rabbis living at the time of Jesus, the law was important, but the oral law, or the Mishnah, was even more important than the law of Moses. And in the Mishnah, there were 35 pages devoted to this subject of the proper washing of one's hands. You see, the Jews believed that external washing was necessary for spiritual purity. Some rabbis taught that a demon by the name of Shibna would come and sit on a man's hands while he was asleep. And if the next day he ate without washing, the demon could enter the man through his food and thus take control of his life. The rabbis had rules governing how and when to wash. The story's told of one rabbi who almost died of thirst. He was in a Roman prison. And in the prison, he spent all of his water rations ritualistically washing his hands so that he had nothing to drink. And he almost died. He was so preoccupied with his washings. It's interesting, at Jerusalem's Wailing Wall today, there's a wash basin and a spigot right there by the entrance. And the Jewish rabbis continue to encourage people to wash before they enter into the holy areas. For Jews at the time of Jesus, this ceremonial washing was their way to heaven. It was their ticket to heaven. And the Jewish rabbis in Jerusalem were upset over reports that Jesus wasn't following their traditions. Verse 3. Now Jesus answered and said to them, "Why do you also transgress the commandment of God because of your tradition?" You see, their traditions were supposed to be the key to keeping the law. In fact, one rabbi had referred to the old oral traditions, or the Mishnah, as the fence around the law. But Jesus saw it not as a fence, but as a loophole to avoid the law's true intention. He gives an example. He says, "For God commanded, saying, 'Honor your father and your mother, and he who curses father or mother, let him be put to death.'" Kids, pay attention to that. These are strong exhortations. They're straight from the law of God. "But you say," Jesus says to the Jews, "whoever says to his father or mother, 'Whatever profit you might have received from me is a gift to God,' then he need not honor his father or mother. Thus you have made the commandment of God of no effect by your tradition." Now, the law's intention was for children to honor their parents. But Jesus brings up the Jewish law of Corban. This was a familiar Jewish tradition. Corban means gift of God. And here's how this tradition worked. If a grown child knew, that his parents were in trouble and that they were coming to him for financial assistance, then he could pronounce all of his household goods and belongings as korban, or as given to the temple. They remained in his possession. He couldn't sell them. He couldn't give them away, for technically they belonged to the temple. But it kept him from having to help his poor parents. It was a scam to keep a family from doing their duty and caring for their parents. They could turn down their parents and they could feel like they were pleasing God at the same time. And this was just one example of how the traditions were providing loopholes around the real intent of the law. Rather than a fence around the law, the traditions had become a farce in the face of the law. And Jesus tells them, verse 7, hypocrites, well did Isaiah prophesy about you, saying, and he quotes Isaiah 29, verse 13, these people draw near to me with their mouth and honor me with their lips, but their heart is far from me, and in vain they worship me, teaching as doctrines the commandments of men. And here is a danger that should concern Christians of every generation. For often tradition gets mistaken for truth. The doctrines of men get passed off as commandments of God. Hey, tradition might not be bad. It might serve us and help us for a season. But a tradition should never be elevated to the status of Scripture. Traditions eventually run their course. They outlast their usefulness. When a tradition becomes a hindrance to faith, it needs to get kicked out on its ear. What's important are the commandments of God, not the traditions of men. And we should never mistake the two. Verse 10 tells us, when he had called the multitude to himself, he said to them, hear and understand, not what goes into the mouth defiles a man, but what comes out of the mouth, this defiles a man. Now, one commentator calls verse 11 the most revolutionary passage in the New Testament. At least it was in the eyes of the Jews. For dietary laws and outward washings were central to the religion of Judaism. And here Jesus is nullifying the importance of what was all important to the Jews. Jesus is saying that as far as God is concerned, at the heart of the matter is a matter of the heart. That's what counts. The purity that God desires doesn't originate on your plate or on your hands, but in your heart. Righteousness isn't an appetizer, it's an attitude. True purity is inward, not outward. It works from the inside out, not from the outside in. Well, then his disciples came and said to him, do you know that the Pharisees were offended when they heard this saying? As if Jesus didn't know. In other words, Jesus, do you realize you weren't being very politically correct back there? You have offended those Pharisees. You know, every pastor faces this dilemma. Do you know you offended someone today? And I hope you know it's never my desire to be deliberately defensive to anyone. I'm not on the attack with the truth. I love people. I'm not trying to attack them. But there are beliefs and there are behaviors that, quite frankly, offend God. And if I don't speak out against them, I will offend Him. And I will say this, as much as I love you, I would much rather offend you than I would offend God. Jesus answers them in verse 13. He states his opinion of the Pharisees. Every plant which my heavenly Father has not planted will be uprooted. Let them alone. In other words, human teachings, human traditions, they won't stand. They'll eventually get uprooted. Only the commandments of God are eternal. They alone will pass the test of time.
Thanks for joining us today on Sandy Adams Radio with our pastor and teacher, Sandy Adams. We come to you from Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. We're currently going through the book of Matthew from the New Testament. Matthew, one of Jesus' disciples, wrote this gospel to present Jesus as the promised King and Messiah of Israel. From the genealogy that ties Jesus to David and Abraham, to the fulfillment of Old Testament prophecies, Matthew emphasizes that Jesus is the culmination of God's plan. Through his teaching, miracles, and life, we see the kingdom of heaven breaking into the world. As we walk through the life of Christ, we're invited to reflect on what it means to follow him as the true king. How does Jesus' kingship influence your life today? If you have any questions about the message you just heard, or if you have any prayer requests, we'd love to hear from you. You can call us at 770-736-2828. Again, that's 770-736-2828. You can also find more information on our website, sandyadams.org. While you're there, you can listen to our other teachings, or you can also download our mobile app to listen to these messages wherever you are. Join us again next time as Pastor Sandy continues to teach through Matthew on Sandy Adams Radio.